This evening, our speaker comes to us from Newark, Delaware, and that would be Shay. Please help me welcome Shay.
Hi, I'm Shay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shay.
I'm not going to touch that. Microphones freak me out, seriously. It doesn't take much. I frighten easily. I only had 4 sips of Diet Coke. You're welcome. Very hyper easily. let's see. My name is Shay. I'm an alcoholic. I said that right. Yeah. My sobriety date is May 16th of 2005, and my home group is the God, that messes me up seeing feet first. Whenever I come up here, I want it to be feet first. You guys are always the best. Is South College Speakers Group. We meet on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. down in Newark, Delaware. If you get people from Delaware, you probably know, like, we don't like Newark, it's Newark. Yeah. It's not Jersey. No offense if anyone's from Jersey. Okay, let's see. So, I'm an alcoholic, and it takes me a little bit to get going, but look out when I do. And I said the set-aside prayer. Oh, and I feel a little nauseous. I'm sorry. So if I go like this and run, and she's going to be up. So Shelly is very excited about that. Thank you for driving up with me, Shelly. I made myself car sick driving up here. I don't know how that happens, but if you drove with me, you will believe in God. Because that's the only, right? I just kept Shelly talking about herself because I think I'm more dangerous sober driving, to tell you the truth. I'm like, God will get us there. We're good. Okay. So, I don't have a good reason to, or anyone to blame why I'm alcoholic. I always hear people say, like, you know, I came from this kind of family or that. Like, I come from a real, like, sometimes I'm embarrassed to say, or I feel guilty because I have a phenomenal family. I have 2 wonderful parents that are still married and happy about it and love each other. They call me and tell me that they love me and that they're proud of me, even as an adult. Like, ugh. Sometimes that makes me tear up because it's like, even when I don't deserve it, they do that. They tell me that they're proud of me. And even, you know, they say, like, if anyone, you know, really could have just, if any one of the kids, there's 3 of us, like, you know, could have just, like, you know, went into a hole and blamed everything on everybody, it could have been you, and you didn't. And I like to think that that's because I'm really stubborn, though, not because I'm something special. There was no drinking in my family or anything like that. I come from, I want to say, 2 steps below Mennonite Amish, right? I found out on the drive up that Shelly is a little bit more raised Christian than I was, but, like, a very, very religious home. And that worked for them. My parents say that Jesus Christ saved them and their marriage. And they wanted nothing, but this is how I see it now. This is not what I would have told you 10 years ago. But that, you know, Jesus Christ, like, saved their marriage, and that they didn't wanted nothing but to show their children and raise us with something that works for them. They wanted to show us what love is and what community and what fellowship of a church and school and, like, surround us with this teaching. And that's just not what I got from it. I felt very, like, squashed and forced into religion, and that they were trying to tell me who I was and they don't know. And this was all in my head conversations, but, like, I knew when I was young that I didn't really want to be Christian because they would pass around the basket and you had to tithe. And I'm like, I'm not giving them my money. Like, I work for that money. So I would, like, fluff the money around, like I put something in there and I didn't. and then as I got older, you know, all the rules of what I wasn't going to be allowed to do. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound like a good idea. Like, I remember they very generally discussed premarital sex in my Christian school that I went to. And I was like, what? And that was, like, I didn't have the sex talk. It was abstinence and the Bible. And that's what they taught. And so I had to find out on my own. that kind of a thing. So I was surrounded with this very protective net of family and church and school, and like we didn't have any non-Christian friends or anything like that. It wasn't encouraged. I wouldn't say that we weren't allowed, but plus they just thought I was weird. Like the kids, you know, in my neighborhood, when like I told them we couldn't listen to like rock and roll and, you know, that we sung hymns and that my parents listened to family radio and that we didn't watch TV or anything like that. They just thought I was really weird, which I was. My mom always said I'm an odd bird, and I have come to accept that as an adult, that that's okay, that that's how God made me, and that maybe that that's okay, and maybe it's awesome, too, to not be like everybody else. So anyway, so get raised in this family, and I have an older sister and a younger brother, and we're 5 years apart. Like when my brother came home from the hospital, I see like the little babies, and I remembered thinking, all right, this is my child. I'm going to have to raise him. Like, I don't know. Like, my mom didn't tell me that, but I thought, like, I'm responsible for this little kid. And, man, we just adored him and spoiled him and made him the brat he is even as an adult. And my sister, my older sister, was bad. That's, you know, I don't want to say that's what we were raised to believe, but she was. She was one of those, like, she didn't, like, want to hear the rules that my parents had, and so she told them, and so she got kicked out slash moved out, depends who you ask. And when, like, when she was 16, I want to say, and so then, you know, now I'm kind of, like, the oldest, and I didn't like that so much because then the attention, now they could kind of focus on me, and that sounded like it's a good thing, but I didn't really care for that so much. So I kind of get through high school, but I convinced my parents to let me go to one glorious year of public school. That was my sophomore year, and I convinced them because I said that that I need to bring God to these people, and and that there was this group called Campus Life. I actually think it's still around. It's in college campuses mainly, but that I was going to go, like, do mission work in public school and, like, you know, help people. And really it was like, I know that those public school kids know what's up, and that's the only way I'm going to learn. And so I did that, and it was great. I learned how to cut class and drink and smoke weed. I've never been good at smoking anything, but I tried, and boys and all the things, because they made fun of me. I won't say the term, especially because there's kids here, but I didn't know what a lot of things meant when they said certain words, and so I made it my mission to find out what they meant, and I did. And then my parents promptly said, you need to go back to that private Christian school the next year. And so I barely graduated. I love when people come up here because this is not me. You know, they're like, you know, I tested genius and, you know, I just had all this I am deadpan average at best of anything I do, even in here. I'm like, I'm not the smartest. I'm not the least smart. I'm just kind of average, right? Average at anything I do, running, like I run even now, like a lot of races. I'm not a great runner. I'm not the worst runner. I'm just somewhere in between. I'm just happy if I finish. It's great. That's been a wonderful thing to accept that in AA, that it's okay to just be just okay with right here. Not here, not down here. I always thought either had to be the best day ever or it was the worst. Life is the pits. And that was the attitude I brought into here. Okay. All right, so my childhood is boring. That's why I kind of, like, try to skim through that pretty quick. I don't want to say it's boring. It's just it's not exceptional. We were talking about having a good story. I feel like I have the most boring story. But I make a lot of hand motions and gestures. Hopefully that makes it a little bit more interesting. I'll take feedback afterwards. You can let me know. Okay. So I graduate, and I'm 17 and a half when I graduate, and I think, I always thought, if you would have asked me before, I would have said I was the best, the most well-behaved of the three children, right? And my parents said that they did tell me this like a few years ago. They're like, you scared us more than any of the other ones. And I was like, what? Like, my sister ran away and did all these bad things and even ended up on the pole and, you know, all that fun stuff. And I was like, she totally had to be the worst. And they said that I was like, holding back Niagara. That's how they described me. If I could describe I don't know, who knows if I was or wasn't born alcoholic. I can tell you I absolutely suffered from alcoholism way before I ever picked up a drink. I just didn't know it. But it was like I was in when horses race, like I don't know any of the terms, but like, you know, the gate and they all line up. That was me just waiting for that gate to open. And trust me, when it did, I was off and quickly because I had a lot of catching up to do, right? Because, like, I don't have a story of, like, I started when I was 6 and things got rough when I was 8. Like, it's not like that for me, you know. Like, I'm not that cool. But I have a son that really made up for it. And I'll tell you, he's the most interesting. Lord willing, when he gets in here one day, that kid will have a hell of a podium talk. He has, like, a whole legal history. I'm still paying for those lawyers and that kind of stuff. But I didn't have any of that. Okay, so I graduate, I work, my parents totally taught us a work ethic. I still have that to this day, thank goodness. But I think they realized that they really didn't have a grip on me anymore, and they knew I was going to move out because the rule always was in our house, like when you turn 18, you're going to pay rent or you goodbye, you got to go. So I remember thinking, well, if I'm going to pay rent, I mean, I'm going to go live where I want and do what I want to do. So my sister, who was 5 years older than me, she said, why don't you come live with me? I didn't know all that she did and what she did for a living and all that kind of stuff. So this innocent, well, I don't want to say innocent. Let me take that back. Naive, extremely naive girl went from like knowing nothing to like woo, being into a whole world of like she gambled and did all like partied and all this kind of stuff. And that's around the time I found The Grateful Dead, when Jared Garcia was still alive. I'm proud to say that. And I have an awful tattoo to prove it, let me just tell you. So bad. Like, you know how they say you get a tattoo and then one day you'll regret it? Well, I really wanted a dancing bear. And that was one of the Grateful Dead symbols, but I thought that that wasn't, like, cool enough. Like, when I went to the tattoo parlor, so I decided to get, like, a skull. You know, the Grateful Dead, like, with the, and you have to explain that every single time. But, and now, all these years later, I'm like, man, I really wish I had the bear. I still would have liked the bear. It would have been good. But that was one of my many poor decisions. So I move in with my sister. I start traveling with the Grateful Dead. But I was the only one of my hippie friends that actually worked and bathed. There was that. And shaved, because I was like, that's weird. Like, I don't know, it's a lot of hair, and I just wasn't into that. But, and it wasn't even that I was necessarily just thought that the music was all that great, although live was awesome, I will say. But when I listened to the CDs, I'm like, ooh, what was I thinking? But, man, they had great, it was a nonstop party, and I liked that. So I went from, like, living this kind of innocent life where I tried alcohol, like, throughout high school when I could kind of get a hold of it and not have my parents know, to full access, and that was awesome. And then everything that comes with that. I most certainly am an alcoholic, and I came in here for alcohol. I'm actually one of the only people I know that actually came to AA for alcohol, at least around where we're down in Newark, Delaware. But, of course, I think probably like any teen, I tried everything. There's nothing I said no to, and I had a lot of exploring to do. And how can you say you don't like something if you've never tried it, right? I've done everything except for stick a needle in my arm. I think God saved me from that, getting pregnant. That was a wonderful way to avoid that. So traveling with the Grateful Dead, and then tragedy struck. Jerry Garcia died in the summer of 95. So then the party went to rave scene, and because, well, they have all the good stuff. And so I did that, and then I ended up pregnant. I was 19. And so my parents were like, well, of course this is going to happen, you know. But like I said, I think that God did save me, because right when I got pregnant and I kind of left all like those friends, they all got into heroin right at that time. So I would have done that too. Trust me. Like, I'm no better than that. I would have been like, yeah, sure, let's go. And so now I'm pregnant. And I'll tell you something. I didn't know up from down, really. I think sometimes I still don't. But all of a sudden, I can't drink. And I thought it was just like maybe what, not morning sickness, but you know, like depression or like hormones and all this. But I would just cry. And I had the healthiest pregnancy, only gained like 19 and a half pounds. I was in good shape, but like everything, I was the healthiest probably I've ever been. But I thought it was the most awful time of my life when I see other people that seems to be a joy for them. Like, I'm fascinated to talk to my friends when they like get married and then they talk about having a child and then they plan that process. And I'm like, what's that like? Like, you planned to have a child? Like, what is that like? Because that wasn't my experience. And so now I'm pregnant. I'm shaking. I don't know what that is. I just thought I was depressed. And like, I definitely had withdrawal. Oh, and I learned that sometimes you shouldn't necessarily be honest with doctors when they ask you all the things you've done before, because then I ended up getting pee tests every single week when I was pregnant, even though I didn't even, you know. And so the one like hippie nurse was like, you know, honey, if you don't actually have a problem with those things, maybe you shouldn't tell people that you do them. I was like, oh, okay. But I didn't drink the whole time. And when I had him, my son, okay, so here's an experience. I feel like I maybe knew what love, knew my parents loved me and that kind of wonderful thing. But so the most intense experience to me, like even what it's like to be an alcoholic, was the day this boy was born, right? It was the most intense love I've ever experienced in my entire life, meeting him. Plus, I'm glad it was over, because that was not fun. Labor, that sucks. But also intense, massively intensive fear of like, oh my God, I'm responsible for another human being. What, like, I'm a child myself. What am I doing? So now it's like me and this little baby. And you know, my parents were like, you know, you should probably go back to school and do this and that. And like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I just kind of take suggestions. Like, you know, they said diaper him this way, feed him this way. And I did those things because I didn't have any clue. So I started working again and kind of going to school, but drifting. I always used to say, go like one step forward and a couple steps back and never really getting anywhere. But eventually I get my own place again. And, I made a conscious decision when I had my son. I said, I'm going to be a good mom. I am not going to use drugs anymore. I'm going to be a good mom. I'm going to just drink. That worked out well for me. because drinking I did from pretty much from 21 until I got sober. I guess I was 27, 28 or something when I got sober, and I thought I was going to be like the youngest recovering person ever. And turns out I was like a decade older than a lot of the people in my own group. I'm like, what? But I drank every single day. Nobody in my family, honestly, to this day really believes, that I drank how I did, because I want to say learned, but maybe observed that maybe how I drink isn't how one should drink in public. So I learned pretty young, that probably bars weren't the best idea for me, because, I was unpredictable, like we are. So I would stay home and drink, and I would, you know, not try, you know, I wasn't going to drink and drive, because that's just not what you do. But just, of course, all of those things just go away really quickly. And the next thing you know, I don't think I really drew much of a sober breath until, a year before I actually got sober. I decided I probably have a problem with alcohol and that perhaps I should stop. Plus, I had this idea in my head that I should probably have my life cleaned up by the time I was 30. So this might be a couple year project. I don't know. Maybe I should start now. So I start on this process and, like, you know, trying all the human ways to do that. Doctors and counselors and therapists, lying to all of them. Of course, it's my family. And the child's father was never in his life and you don't know. And I'm depressed and all of these things. And so then they give me medications and then I'm drinking on top of those. And I start ending up at my parents' house in the middle of the night, like with the cat and my son, like crying. And they're like, they don't know what to do with me. They're like, my mom's like, do you need water? Like, I don't know. She didn't know. They didn't know what to do with me. And my favorite was to watch, like, those, like, rehab shows, like, especially the ones where they were in Malibu, because that looked really romantic, as I'm drinking, of course. I'm watching these shows, and, like, I don't know, they have art therapy, and, like, I don't know, like emotion baskets they would make on these shows, and I just thought, wow, this is great. So I started emailing these shows. They haven't called still, but whatever. I, like, emailed, try to, like, get on with these shows, because why not on national television? That would probably be the best way to get sober, right? Like, just clueless. I'm dating someone. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say that. Like, right before I realized I probably have a problem with alcohol, I think what really helped me is I started dating someone that, doesn't drink at all. And, like, he's not an alcoholic. He just is, like, one of those weird people that, like, believes he only puts things in his body that serve a higher purpose, like, really healthy. Weird. Which weirdly I thought I was too. So I was like the healthiest alcoholic ever. Like all organic, like, you know what I mean? Made my own, it was insane. But I could drink about a half a gallon of gin and tonic and still go to a yoga class and I still have amazing balance. I think it was because of the, I don't know, we'll say. But, you know, just like, but delusional in my head. Like, I am very healthy. Like, nobody else knows. You're not living as clean as I do. Like, you know, running. Like, the only time I wasn't drinking during those last couple years was if I was running or, like, at the gym. Because I needed something to, like, in my mind, train for. I was just desperately looking for anything to, like, fix me. Of course, none of these things, as soon as I was done, I would be drinking because that's healthy and that's what you should do. So I'm dating this person who doesn't drink. Well, so quickly I realized, like, well, how do I drink? Because probably it's not a good idea to just drink how I drink in front of this person. So I became the world's best girlfriend. So I would, like, go to his house, and I'm, like, cleaning and doing laundry and cooking and shopping. Not because I'm so great. It's because that is time not near him where I can just drink. And I learned really quickly to, like, hide things and, you know, how we do seltzer bottles because that was healthy. And, like, hand-juiced vegetable drinks and fruit drinks, and you just pour vodka in there. It's fine. I know. Like, that's crazy. And I would try to drink drinks that all the reasons I changed my drinks over the years had nothing to do with what I liked or my preference. It was because my son would rat me out. Okay. Like, I liked beer. I like good beer. I still love the smell. Like, I don't go up and smell bottles, but you know what I mean? Like, really good quality beer. And but then I found my son was, like, 3, like, in the corner, like, chugging it. And I was like, oh, that's probably not good. Making him do tests. And then I don't know if I made him how he is, but so then I couldn't have that. So I liked brown liquor and, like, things that you could mix with, like, diet sodas and stuff like that. But then my son would say, "Mommy's drinking brown stuff again." And I'm like, "Oh, this kid ratting me out." So then I switched to clear things, not because I like them, but because they're much easier to hide. It looked normal, at least in my mind. Of course, I'm delusional, so I can't really trust my judgment. But my son remembers me doing all the things normal moms would do. Like, well, I'm not really normal, but, like, I would take it, like, he did sports and you know, like, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts and, like, and I would go there and I'd be reading and drinking my seltzer water. Well, you know, a drop of seltzer in the bottle of seltzer water. And take him to all these things and take him, you know, to learn to ride a bike and all those things. But never did I ever do any of those things sober. And then mommy would fall asleep on the couch every single night. And he learned, like, not that you should know how to do this, but like he learned how to fend for himself, but I tried to make it easy, like things that he could reach in the fridge when mom's passed out on the couch, like, you know, juice boxes and yogurts, things that were like a little kid. And like when I got sober, I swear he was like a little caveman. Like he didn't know table manners. Like seriously, like he had to relearn how to tie his shoes and like use utensils. Like he would crouch on a table, on top of the table, like down and eat his food like this. And I thought that was completely normal because I didn't want to be able to take time to teach him those basic things. But in my mind, I was feeding him. I took him to school every day, and you know, he would do sports and activities. And I think I was even the PTA mom one year. I don't know how I did that because I was really drunk. But maybe that's the only way to get through those meetings. I don't know. They're awful. I don't recommend them. But so I'm hiding it from this, and then I'm mad at this boyfriend, like, man, because he was a doctor, and I remember thinking, like, what kind of doctor doesn't even know his own girlfriend's dying, like, drinking, he doesn't even know, he's stupid, you know, I'm mad at him, like, he's not even doing anything, but I'm drinking, and I'm blaming him, and then I even told my parents and my aunt, and they're like, we're going to help you. And they would call me every morning, like, you can stay sober today. I'm like, yeah, I can. I'm worth it. And all these things. And then I couldn't stay sober. And I would try to, like, mark my bottles, write notes on them, like, you're weak if you drink me, and, like, weird notes around the house, like, just crazy people stuff. And then, so after like a year of trying to get sober myself, so I could stay sober, I don't know, the longest I ever was able to stay sober by myself was once for 6 whole weeks. I did it. And I don't know how I did it, but like powered through it. And it was miserable, but I did it. And then for no good reason, I think just the sun was shining, I just thought a fresh mojito, like hand squeezed and good, you know, lime and mint would be a great idea that day. And so that's what I did. And of course, off to the races. So then my mom, my Christian mother, who I didn't even know she knew what AA was. I didn't even know. I didn't, when I came here, true story, I didn't even know that AA stand for Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing. I think that saved my life. I had no preconceived ideas of what Alcoholics Anonymous was. But my mom called me and she said, Shay, there's this AA clubhouse down the road from where they were living at the time in Newark. And I was like, how would my mom know what AA is or what a AA clubhouse? I didn't even know what AA clubhouse was. And it's because her, what I like to say, nosiness, like she's that one that she'll be like, oh, look, the neighbor's got new furniture, because she's looking in their windows as she's walking by. Like, that's my mom, right? Like, oh, look at their new lamps. And there, you know, like, well, she wanted to know what that plain, unmarked brick building with no sign on it was in front of the country club and the church with all those people smoking out front. And so she started asking around, and she found out that that was an AA place. And I was like, oh. And so I looked up Alcoholics Anonymous online. Google is an amazing tool. And I found a meeting list, and I saw a meeting there that said beginners. And I thought, oh, well, that's where you start. Little do I know. It's a great place to go find newcomers, I'll tell you, but it can be quite a disaster. So I go, and I didn't realize how punctual you all are. I thought like 8-ish is a, you know, so I come in and everyone's already seated, and I'm like, no, I'm always so impressed with like newcomers now. They're like up and down and they're getting coffee and they're going to the bathroom. I walked through that door, and if I could have turned into paint, I would have. I like kind of slid against the wall and, you know, eyeballing everybody up. I don't know what's going on. And this is the kind of like beginners meeting where they like kind of crowd the people with like less than a year at the tables in the front. And then I guess all the wise folks like sit around them. Perhaps there was going to be laying on of hands. I wasn't sure. I'm still trying to figure it out. There's a lot of signs, and there's like a lot of slogans. I don't know what's going on. I've seen a lot of God. What is this? And I'm seeing a basket. I knew the website lied. They said it was free. And I'm like, why? Do I have to tithe? I don't know. I didn't bring money. Crap. I'm not going to blend. I'm not sure. Do I want to blend? I don't know. So I come in. I just like kind of sit towards like the back. Like I've been there all my life, just blend. I don't look like the glaring sick newcomer, not at all. And this woman comes up to me, like kind of like, this is how I remember, like kind of shaking her coffee and like, oh, sweetheart, you need to go sit up there. And I was like, crap, my mother must have called. She's like, I don't know why you would think that. And I tell her that now. And like, I thought for sure my mother must have called and told them my whole life story and that they need to help me and that I'm so sick and I'm dying or something. And so I like kind of like put my head down and tuck my tail between my legs. I'm like, go up and I sit next to this girl who, I don't know, she was only a girl up there. So I just sat next to her and she was around my age. And then I see this big book and I was like, oh my God, is this the Bible? Like, is this church? Is that what we're doing here? Like, I don't know. Like I always hear people like compare themselves out. I wanted to just blend and just make you think that I don't even know what I wanted you to think, but just not something not like you, I guess, something like that. And so I go up there and so I know nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I just learned the previous day that AA standard for Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know that they keep saying, do you have a big book? Do you have a big book? What is the big book? I don't even know. It's like, oh, that blue book. Oh, it says Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that's convenient. And then they gave me a big, big book. That's so generous. I'm like, how thoughtful, a whole book all for me. That's so very nice. And then they're reading and it was like, you know, like, wah, 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 wah. I don't know what's happening. I'm trying to like look around, figure everybody out, judging the crap out of every one of you, but inside feeling I'm by far the worst of all of you, if you only knew. And then I guess they read something kind of like you guys did. And so I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. And what did they read? The very first thing is, we agnostics. And I'm going to paraphrase because I'm the worst memorizer ever. I blame it on Bible class growing up because I had to like memorize Bible verses. And so I would only be able to memorize it just to be able to tell the teacher on Fridays and then forget it for the rest of my life. I know some of the stories still. Yeah. And it said in there, you know, I'm going to mess this up so bad. In the first chapter, and I didn't even know what agnostic meant. I had to look that up. Actually, I didn't look that up. Somebody told me. Am I kidding? I was too lazy to look that up. trying to be honest. But it said, like, you know, if when drinking you find you cannot stop, you may be suffering from a disease that only a spiritual experience from can conquer. Is that, that's ish, kind of it. Like, you know, you can look it up. It's in Weak Gnostics. That hit me like a ton of bricks. Because I don't know what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was. I didn't even know why I really was there, except I knew I could not go on living how I couldn't stay sober by myself or any capacity I knew. And yet when I was sober, why did I want to crawl out of my skin? And why did the whole world seem amplified and too bright? And I don't know how to deal. And why am I so nervous? And why are my anxiety attacks like, and I just can't seem to function. And I can't even get up to go to work and all of these things. Like, why is all this happening? If alcohol is my problem, I don't know what's going on. Maybe I'm crazy. I'm not sure, but I don't want you to know. Maybe if I am crazy. And, but as soon as that happened, as soon as I read that and I'm like, what? You guys are selling God? Also, just something kind of like cracked a little bit in my heart. And I remember thinking, like, what else do you have? I didn't know all you were going to feed me, but I knew. I don't think I was intelligent enough to say, like, I knew what I should do. I just knew I should just shut up and maybe just listen. And so I did that. Plus, I think somebody actually did say that to me. Like, shut up and listen. But I wasn't talking. I was like, you're the one talking. Why am I the one shutting up? And of course, they make the whole meeting about the newcomer. And I don't know if that's helpful or not. But I remember being really pissed off about that. Like, hey, you just told me all about your divorce. Perhaps you should focus on that. I didn't say that, but I was thinking it. You know, and somebody's lawnmower. Like, they were going to drink. It was some serenity threatening. Something about their lawnmower. I don't know. You know, and it just none of it really made sense. I heard little words would come through like, oh, get a sponsor. I heard home group. I heard go to meetings. Make your sobriety important to you, or maybe first in your life or stuff like that. And how does a newcomer know? Like, I don't know what a sponsor is. I don't even know what AA is. How am I supposed to have stuff figured out? You know, like now there's pamphlets and stuff like that. But I didn't know, but I was like, okay, I guess I'm coming to they said keep coming back. And I was like, okay, so I did. And they gave me a meeting list, and it was just for that place. So I thought that was, this must be all of AA, perhaps for Delaware. I don't know, maybe all of AA in the tri-state area. I'm not sure. I wasn't aware that there was other meetings. And so I go there every single day for like a week. And at a week, I'm going to tell you, I never in my life, never have I been suicidal. And I felt suicidal that day. I think I was mainly not suicidal because the way I was raised, I was more afraid of dying because what if what my parents said was true? And what if I was going to go to hell? That sounded a little more scary than the hell I was already living. I don't know. Maybe it would have gotten worse. So, so I want to die. And I was thinking to myself that day, sitting in an AA meeting, I haven't had any alcohol or anything in my body for over a week. I don't think it's the alcohol. I don't think alcohol is what's wrong with me. And so I get up to leave because I was like, screw you all. If I'm going to be miserable, I am not hanging out with you all. So I start heading out, and this woman kind of gently, I remember her grabbing my arm. I think she just kind of like, hey, like touched my arm. And she said, you know, there's other AA meetings. And I said, no, really? And she said, yeah, there's this other one. There's a lot of young people. And I was like, finally, other young people. Of course, I was still, like I said, 10 years older than a lot of these people that were there. She said, yes, there's one tonight. It's down the road at this little church. And I said, are you going to be there? And she said, yes. And I felt hope. I don't know why, but that day seemed a little bit better. And of course, I had something else, like, I don't know, like a kickboxing class that was a little bit more of a priority. So I showed up 10 minutes late because, you know, hello, I wanted to kill myself that morning, but this was more important. So I get there. And the reason I tell that story is because when I come in, I'm a couple minutes late, and everything about this meeting was different. Like, what can I look back now? It probably wasn't, but I all of a sudden had to play catch up again. It seemed like everybody was brighter and shinier and happier, and I was trying to figure it out because like I sit down, I blend, I'm trying to figure out the room, and I was thinking, well, maybe these aren't alcoholics. Maybe these are like the children of alcoholics. Perhaps these are nursing students. I don't know. Perhaps these are missionaries. I'm not sure. Why is everyone happy? And there was someone up at the podium, and I don't know. She looked really shiny, and like she worked at Hollywood Tan or something. Like she looked like tan, and I'm pale. So, you know, that was attractive. I wish I had more color. And I didn't relate to anything she said about how she drank or how she was raised or anything like that, but there was an undeniable thing about her that she was absolutely comfortable with who she was right there, right then, and that was not at all how I felt, inside, outside, anywhere side. So I would love to say that, like, you know, I went up to her and asked her to sponsor me or something like that after the meeting. But what really happened is as soon as they say the prayer, I'm still freaked out. Why are we holding hands? Why are you trying to hug me? I don't know you. It's a lot. Like, the guys used to tell me, like, what, were you in prison? I'm like, no. They say a prison hug. I'll show you how afterwards. It's how you just not let people too close. You got to, like, grab their shoulder and you go in like that. Like, you don't get to And that usually freaks guys out. And I'll hug you, but that's because I'm older now and I can hold my own. But I was really weirded out then, even more skittish than I am now. So I would love to say that I was like, you know, went up, but I didn't. So I went as soon as the prayer's over, you know, bolt, because that's what you do. And I knew, like, you got to get through all the people, and then there's people smoking out there, and I got to figure out how to get, you know, I don't know. It's a lot. It's a lot to figure out in and out and during a meeting if you're new. And really what happened is then these women just like hawks, like, whoom, like circled around me. That's how I remember it. And they're all like, hey, what's your name? Where do you live? What do you do? Where, you know, what step are you on? Who's your sponsor? What's your home group? Oh my God. Like, and I'm just like, ah, why are you talking to me? Yay. They noticed me. And that was all at once. Like, get away. Yay. I'm here and accepted. And like, so it's always these totally opposite thoughts at all times. I think that's what it is to be an alcoholic, like that egomaniac with an inferiority complex. But like, they brought me in, and I realized that I didn't have a choice. I was in the fold, whether you liked it or not. I guess I could have left, but, you know, they were really wonderful and asked me where I was going to be the next day. And then like the next meeting I went to, met some of the girls that were there, and it was my now home group. And man, that place, the only way I can describe it is when I walked into my home group, South College, is it felt like there was an energy ball in there. Like, it felt alive, like, and I felt so dead inside and out, and there was life there, like goosebumps I had the whole time, and I don't even remember who was speaking the first time I went there. I just remember the way I felt, and it was intense and like home. And then the girl that was speaking at the meeting I had gone to like earlier that week, like afterwards, like I realized like I need a sponsor at this point. I don't even know what a sponsor is, but I realize I'm supposed to choose one. And so she's with this other girl and she looked a little sick. This is so awful, but I'm just telling the truth. Shallowness perhaps saved my life. I don't know. You'd be the judge. Like, so these girls are, they're talking to me and they're kind of leaning in and they're looking at each other and they're looking at me and looking at each other and looking at me. And I realized, oh my God, I have to choose. And then I was like, I pick you. And the girl that looked healthy and well and tan, much tanner than me. And the other thing is I felt like she just seemed to know what was going on. I'm not sure that I thought she knew what was going on with AA per se, but like she just seemed to be okay with life. And I remember her saying something like this, like, okay. She says this is not all what she says, but this is how I remember it. She was like, I am not your doctor. I'm not your counselor. I am not, I'm not a marriage counselor. I don't have kids, so I don't know what the hell you're doing with that. And, you know, all this, like, I'm not your, like, legal counsel, any of those things. She's like, the only thing I know is I've had an experience with the steps, and I would like to take you through the steps, but more importantly, I would like to show you how to take others through the steps. And I remember being okay with that because she was much younger than me, so I don't really think I was going to take life advice from someone, you know, without my magnificent experience. So that's what she did. She took me through the steps. And I would love to say that I was a super willing participant, was an excellent sponsee, and just did everything when she told me to do it. But the truth was, is I would move forward when pain would motivate me. You know, I'd move forward, start to feel really good, and then like draw on my own, like I got this. And then pain would just keep pushing me forward. The other thing is I got like a new job at that time. I don't know why they hired me, but, cause I was like brand new sober. And I remember thinking like, I better get through these steps because I don't think I deserve this job and they might figure it out. So I should probably try to get well. So that motivated me. And so I start going through this, but really quickly, like for me, like within the first few weeks, I remembered waking up thinking, oh, I don't want to die. And more than that, I kind of am happy. And I remember thinking like, oh, don't jinx it. Keep moving forward, you know. And so I did certain things every day. Like when they told me to pray, when I woke up in the morning on my knees, I did that. And like even put note cards and because I couldn't remember. And I would took job at my home group. And we started traveling and coming a lot of places because they were all about that. And I was like, I'm a mom. I have a job. I don't like, you know, I have a life. And they're like, great, get in the car. And I'm like, okay. And, also I was a single mom. So I'm like, what do I do with this child? I can't always have babysitters. And so they're like, well, bring him. And so he became very quickly the mascot. I want to say the mascot. And so within a year of me being sober too, my son asked to go through the steps. I don't know if he remembers that now, but, that was amazing. It held me so much more accountable. So like really quickly, my life starts to get better. And I'm not saying the outside changed. It was how I perceived it inside completely changed. Like everything. I could just see things completely differently. And these girls that I did not seek to be my friend, just show up. Like I learned if you have a house in AA, like they just show up and they will throw sober parties at your house, whether you're there or not. So I should probably be there and cook food for them. So that's what I did. And, they're like my sisters. They're wonderful. amazing people, and they took my son in. Like, the guys in my home group have been the, for better or worse, but have been the brother, the dad, the like the something that he's never had, and like he learned things you shouldn't know way early, and he is, oh man, is he funny. Okay, if I could describe my son, it would be like if old Dave Chappelle, like before he went crazy, and South Park and Family Guy raised a child, that's my son. Like, he is beyond his years, hilarious. Oh my God, is he funny. So, like, I want to say bad. He's not bad. He's a fantastic human being, but he just is, like, I personally think he might stay up at night, like, how can I make my life harder? And that's what he then does. Like, he told me when he was 14, he said, Mom, I just think you should know, like, what my passions are in life and hobbies, and they are graffiti, weed. Mom, I love weed, and that's just, you know, and skateboarding. And I'm like, well, why does 2 out of 3 have to be illegal? And, you know, then I started getting calls from the cops, and because then he would love to do his graffiti work and then take pictures on his phone and keep it. And so, charges. I'm like, honey, and he's the worst criminal. Like, he got caught shoplifting at every single store. Like, while, like, an undercover cop is, like, right next to him. Like, he's just bad at being a criminal. But, you know, we were like, okay. So I don't know what the proper way of how to make a kid, like, not do these things. Something I think that will always stick in his mind, and he even says so, is I have shown him a message of hope. And he knows that there's hope in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, there's that time when he was still innocent, like 8 to 12. He wanted to come to AA. He took a job. Like, he didn't even drink coffee, but the guys would pick him up like an hour before the meeting, and he would make coffee. He was so pissed when he couldn't come to, like, certain commitments with me, like at behavioral health hospitals, because he had to be 18. He's like, that's bunk. Like, I got more sober time than any of these people you're with. And like, I'm like, oh no. Like, they don't know. You know, and then he was the kid, like, I think in like one of his health classes, they were talking about alcohol and drug addiction, and he was like this, and then finally, like, you know, he's like, you have it all wrong. It's a spiritual malady. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, they're like, okay, you know, like he would tell them, and like every night he'd be like, who are we picking up tonight? Are we picking up Paige? Are we picking up Jen? You know, like, he kept me involved, and I want to say, like, it was him, but like, he was amazing. He's so a part of every part of who I am. Of course, then he discovered marijuana. So yeah. And he's 18 now, and man, I'll tell you, it has been a ride with him. I know some consistencies is I've done the same things. When I went through the steps and you know, work with others, I know how to do that. Because it's not my thoughts. There's very clear direction in the book, and I was given clear direction, so therefore I can give clear direction. And if I don't know the answer, I got a big sponsorship family that I can ask for direction. I know how to do that. I know how to reach my hand out to the newcomers. It's where I feel the most comfortable. I don't feel comfortable up here, but I love talking with new people. I love crazy people. They're my favorite. And they're really fun. But it's like living life. Like, that's the challenging part, right? Like, how do you live with your family and, you know, people that are like, you know, because of course when I think probably like maybe most alcoholics, like I'm sensational thinking, and so I needed to then tell my parents, like, I had this wonderful God, and maybe what you're doing isn't right. They have a whole lot more experience with their God than I did, but you know, I wanted to be able to debate why I'm right and they're wrong. So probably that's not the best approach. But finally, like, I think I've been sober, well, almost 10 years, and just a couple years ago, like, finally, like, they don't say, well, that's great, you're going to hell. They, my parents, like, they'll say, my dad had said to me, I can see that you're on a path and I can see God working in your life. I don't know where it's going to lead, but keep doing what you're doing. And I have brought people around. So my parents have been involved because my parents have a great house in Newark and they've let me host big things like weddings and a funeral and that kind of stuff like at their house. So they know the people, like they're like, how's Anna? How's Sarah? How's, you know, Julie and how's so-and-so? And, they see it working through other people, not through my words telling them how wonderful AA is. And I think that really is the best thing we have is our actions. I've been able to make amends. Wonderful. Like, I feel like they weren't that fantastic doing them, but living them has been really cool. Like, my dad, he's amazing. He's so badass. My dad's amazing. I tell you, I swear that's why I've never been married. It's because nobody is awesome as my dad. They also taught me to be really independent and strong. But I asked him, I think it was like, a year and a half ago. I was like, Dad, want to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro with me? And he was like, yeah, sure. And I was thinking like, he probably won't. And he called me the next day. He says, Shay, I'm not getting any younger. Let's book this trip. And like 6 weeks later, we were all on a flight to Tanzania, Africa. And we climbed that mountain together. So that was an amazing experience on all kinds of levels because, well, climbing is cool and dirty, but awesome. But I've always been close with my family, but have you ever spent night like in a very tiny tent for 8 nights with your dad, like in a very closed quarters and done something that's physically, mentally, spiritually exhausting? How awesome it was when we reached the top. First of all, I had massive vertigo. I'm like, ooh, I don't know what's up and down. And my dad goes to, like, he hugs me and I don't know. It was insanely powerful. But there aren't words to describe it. So we come back down off the mountain, we come home, and we still, all this time later, like, we just have this look we give each other, and like, because we experienced it together. And that's really what we have here. Like, I can't explain it to other people. Like, I've brought lots of friends and coworkers and family members to AA, and they're like, wow, this is really great. It's not what I thought it was. And, you know, that, but like, they can't know the power of this thing that saves us, but they can see what it does in our lives. And, like my friends and family, they see, like, even with my son, like, my God, the constant, like, now he's 18. So now he actually has an adult record. They don't see me just falling apart over it. Like, I go to work every day and I do my job and I help my sponsees, and I don't know what's going to happen to that boy. I don't know if he's going to live or die. I'm hoping he gets to be one of the lucky ones. But he might not. I remember my parents did, like, a lot of what they taught me when I was young kind of comes when I'm older. I'm like, oh, they kind of did know what they were talking about. But I just thought they didn't know anything. I remember my dad talking about being a good steward of something, like, you know, of, like, the home you own. Like he always taught us, like, when you have something, you share it. You know, you have a home, you have people over. You don't hoard something to yourself. And I have learned that, like, even my child is not my own. And that he's God's child, and that I get the privilege of getting to be with him. Like, right now, we're in a good point. Like, he's home right now. He isn't selling pounds of weed out of my house, which he was before. That's a great AA member there. But I don't know if he's gonna be able to finish school. He still doesn't have a driver's license or anything like that. But, like, even tonight, he was like, that's awesome, Mom. I'm glad you're going. Tell everybody I said hi. Right? But, like, he says it, like, of the few times where he has, like, not had access to his drug, and he's like, oh, like, you can see. And he goes, I know what I'm describing sounds like untreated alcoholism, Mom. But, like, he knows. Like, that's what he's got. But he's like, I'm just not ready. And just like 2 weeks ago, he did tell me, he's like, Mom, my plan isn't working. It sucks to be on my team. I'm not sure what I'm willing to do, but I'm willing to do something different. And I said, well, I guess that's all I could ask for. And so I think that I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to keep reaching my hand out and helping people because, oh my God, the girls I've sponsored have helped me so much more, I'm sure, than I have ever helped them. It's such a blessing to be able to be in their life and to be able to like share in lives with all you people, getting to know you over the years. It's been amazing. And I think that's all I have. Thanks.